Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
More strikes in America. Steelworkers in Ohio, iron workers in Pennsylvania, John Deere workers still on strike, but a strike averted in Philadelphia with transit workers. Today on the show, we talk about promoting safety training on behalf of the iron workers and the United Labor Agency. Welcome to the Wednesday, November 3rd edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, most recently the platform known as Stitcher. Wayne Cressup is going to be our first guest on the show today. No stranger to this show. He comes to us from the Ironworkers, where he is a district rep in their safety and health department. Longtime Ironworker, ironworkers.org. And their full name is the International Association of Bridge, Structural, Ornamental, and Reinforcing Iron Workers Union. They represent about 120,000 members in North America. The members of the union have worked on nearly every major construction project you can think of, like the Golden Gate Bridge, the Sears Tower, the St. Louis Arch, the oil sands plant expansion in Alberta, Canada, the World Trade Center. They represent iron workers who work on bridges, structural steel, ornamental, architectural, miscellaneous metals, rebar, and in shops. The number one issue, think about the high-rise buildings they work on. It's safety. It's safety, and that's primarily what Wayne is going to talk about, because it's safety first, and they've had a very, very aggressive campaign on behalf of the iron workers, and it's been going on for years to enhance safety training, and that's primarily what we're going to get into with Wayne. We'll also get into the apprenticeship programs on behalf of the iron workers, and all the building trades right now are really pushing their apprenticeship programs because there's so many jobs available. And hopefully they'll get this Build Back Better program going on. We do have a bipartisan deal, and apparently that's being stalled because of the reconciliation package. The iron workers came out in support of the Build Back Better framework several months ago. We could probably touch on that as well. Speaking of the iron workers, about 40 members of Local 851 are staying united on the picket line as their strike against Erie Strayer Company is now in its fifth week. They are fighting for the basics, fair wage increases, dental coverage, and an end to drastic attendance reporting policies. The union said management is refusing to bargain in good faith and has rejected multiple offers over the past several months in those negotiations, leaving members without a contract. So, if you want to get some more information, you can go to this website. It's ErieStrayerStrike.com. ErieStrayerStrike.com. And you could follow the Iron Workers fight. Dave Meganhart will be joining us later in the show. He's one of our regulars and a sponsor. He comes to us from the United Labor Agency. And they have an event coming up later this month, November 18th. It's going to take place at the Art Museum. Now, they didn't do this last year. It's called the Unsung Heroes Dinner, and they've been doing this. I think they did it virtually last year, but what they do, they'll get about maybe six, seven, depending on how many applications they get from various unions in Northeastern Ohio, and salute the people that make those organizations tick. And these are the ones that just don't get the accolades. That's why they call them the unsung heroes. So we'll touch on that. We'll also talk about preparing for work after the pandemic. And as you know, this is a very interesting time. There's a lot of people that are quitting their jobs. I mean, a ridiculous amount. And in some cases, they're just waiting around trying to find the right opportunity for their next path in life. That's where the ULA comes in. Because the ULA tries to connect people with the right job. And if you don't have the skills for that job, they will make sure you connect with those skills. So you can get the right job for you and your family and make a decent wage. And wages are going up. There's no doubt about that. So ulagency.org is our website. You hear me talk about that all the time here on the show. Well, the John Deere workers rejected yet another contract. More than 10,000 members of the UAW are staying on strike against the farm and construction equipment maker John Deere after rank-and-file members voted down a second tentative labor deal with the company late yesterday. Now, the vote was much closer this time, with 45% voting in favor of the proposed six-year deal and 55% opposed. An earlier tentative agreement reached on October 1 was rejected by 90% of the membership in a ratification vote that concluded on October 10th. Many of those voting against the two rejected deals apparently felt that despite pay increases and improved benefits being offered, that the company could afford even more at a time of record profits. The strike against Deere is happening at 14 facilities, mostly in the Midwest. By the way, hats off to the retail, wholesale, and department store union, which is linked with the United Food and Commercial Workers. And specifically, I'm talking about Local 110. They delivered a truckload of supplies to UAW Local 838 members on strike against John Deere. This happened at the end of last week. The donation included packages of diapers, hand warmers, toiletries, food and frozen meats, as well as cases of cereal and snacks, all of them made by Local 110 members at General Mills and Quaker in nearby Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Comment here from the union spokesperson Shane Forbes said, "This is America's heartland, and the heart of our members are showing us just who we are. We know that if we were in their shoes, they'd do the same for us. It's what unions do." Meanwhile, the autumn of discontent marches on. At midnight on Sunday, about 500 steelworkers in Ohio went on strike after contract renewal negotiations between ArcelorMittal and their union, the United Steelworkers Local 3057, broke down abruptly. The local staff rep, Brian Seeley, said that the employer made its final offer on Sunday, then picked up and left to Pennsylvania before the union could give its response. Seeley was dismayed by the company's behavior. This is what he said. "It was nothing we expected. The company provided us with their so-called final offer. They got up and they left the building. We're still waiting to hear from them. We said we would review the offer. They said, okay. 20 minutes later, we found out they left the building unannounced." This is bizarre. Now, there's several issues still holding up the new agreement. One, as is the case in so many labor conflicts, is rest and time off for workers. Some ArcelorMittal workers are scheduled to work 7 days a week and have no guaranteed time off. A normal work week is 56 hours, according to Seeley. As their workers walked out, ArcelorMittal refused to speak with the press. They just got up and left. Crazy. Meanwhile, 6,000 University of California lecturers are preparing to strike. The workers, who do one-third of all teaching, but earn just a fraction of what their tenure-track counterparts do, authorized a strike back in May, with 96% of the lecturers authorizing the University Council American Federation of Teachers, UC-AFT, to call a strike. The lecturers are calling for three things as they prepare to launch their strike. Number one, they want job security. Currently, a lecturer needs to remain at the same campus and same department for 6 consecutive years to earn what they call continuing lecture status. Well, as a result, only 1,200 of the 6,300 lecturers have obtained that status. Secondly, lecturers are demanding a raise. You know why? They're making $19,000 a year. Ask yourself, how do you live on $19,000 a year today? These are lecturers at the University of California. They also say they're overworked. They point to the amount of unpaid labor they do for students, like thesis advising, undergraduate research apprenticeships, and curriculum committees. They've even played counselor for students dealing with food and housing insecurity themselves, and they don't get paid for that. Let's go to Las Cruces, Mexico. Dozens of school bus drivers there went on strike last Thursday to demand a decent contract from their employer, STS New Mexico, that prioritizes the safety of students. Members of the Las Cruces Transportation Federation, Local 6341, said they were left with no choice but to strike after the company failed to meet their demands on student safety and fair treatment of employees. Because of their refusal to address the severe and persistent concerns surrounding the safety of buses and equipment, this has caused disruption to the students' education, according to the president of the union. Transport Workers Union, Local 234, has reached a tentative agreement for a new 2-year contract with the Southeastern Pennsylvania Transportation Authority, better known as SEPTA. Union members had unanimously authorized a strike if an agreement with SEPTA was not reached last week. Willie Brown is the president of 234. He said, "I'm very pleased that we were able to come to terms without a strike. Our members are essential workers who move Philadelphia and who have risked their lives, putting their own families at risk during this pandemic." He said the talks with SEPTA became more productive after the workers made their authorization vote to strike. Yeah, I think that got their attention. "This victory was possible because our members in Philadelphia collectively demonstrated that they were ready, willing, and able to shut the city of Philadelphia down." That came from John Samuelson, head of the National Union. He went on to say their militant audacity to set an example for the entire trade union movement. This tentative agreement meets many of the locals' demands for a fair contract. We're talking increased wages. How about this? A pandemic hazard bonus. Improved parental and pregnancy leave and keeping in place high-quality health insurance. So hats off to Local 234 of the Transport Workers Union. All right, we're going to break. When we come back, worker safety on behalf of the iron workers. That's coming up next.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with cancer after taking Zantac? If you have taken Zantac and have cancer, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly and Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number one. Always enjoy talking to this guy. Wayne Cressup is his name. He's a district rep in the Safety and Health Department of the Iron Workers. Iron Workers, proud sponsors of this show we call America's Workforce. You can find more at ironworkers.org, ironworkers.org. And we should point out that a couple of months ago, Wayne was appointed, among others, to the OSHA Advisory Committee on Safety and Health. And this was quite an accomplishment. And Wayne is joining us right now. Let's start off with that. Hey, Wayne, welcome back. How are we doing today, brother?
Hey, Flash, great to be on again, brother. Appreciate it. And always a pleasure to get to chat with you.
And it's always good to talk about worker safety, because if you're not safe on the job, nothing else matters. Nothing else matters. But you know what? I want to get into what the iron workers do to train their workers in the apprenticeship programs on safety. But let's get an update on this advisory committee. This is quite an accomplished thing to even get nominated to that. I know you're among several people. I don't know, was it 10 or 15 people? And you've got unions, you've got industry reps. Talk to me about that. Let's start off right there.
Sure, you bet. So, yeah, exactly. On the Advisory Committee for Construction Safety and Health, it's an advisory committee under the Department of Labor for OSHA to provide input to the agency on safety and health issues relevant to the construction industry. And I've had the opportunity to serve here to starting out with a 2-year term to serve on this committee. And what we're actually working on a number of different initiatives within the group. And so we have I'm an appointee of 15 people, one of 5 labor representatives serving on this committee. And we have 3 work groups that have been established. And I'm currently serving as a co-chair on the infrastructure work group. And as we had talked on a show before about some of the infrastructure initiatives, you know, safety and health is a big part of it, because we've got a lot of, you know, hopefully if these infrastructure bills actually do come out, we'll have a lot of work coming up for all sorts of, highway, bridges, internet, broadband communication, as well as, water and sewer and all that kind of stuff. So tremendous opportunities to work in the trades. And obviously with each one of those, there's various health and safety factors that need to be considered when working with within each parts of those segments of the industry.
It's funny you bring up that infrastructure bill, because there's so much frustration out there, Wayne. I just hope they can move the needle forward on that and get us moving. I mean, they delayed it. It was supposed to, the bipartisan part was agreed to, and we got, 19 Republicans on board. Now, that deal expired at the end of September. They carried it over to the end of October, and here we are, November 3rd, and we still don't have anything. I just hope they can get everybody together, sit them down, say this is the right thing to do for America. So, yes. To your point, there's going to be a lot of jobs. I'm reading that, altogether, it could be, 4 million jobs that could be created as a result of that piece of legislation. And these are, we're talking a lot of jobs specifically for iron workers, right?
Absolutely. Iron workers, when people think of iron workers, they just think of some of the buildings going up with some of the structural steel. But iron workers we're actually involved in a number of parts of a construction project, whether that's highways and bridges, not just on the structural components, but also on reinforcing as far as rebar and other reinforcing efforts that go into piers and into the concrete. And then ornamental, iron workers do a lot of different work with ornamental work, and then obviously a tremendous amount of welding that goes into some of the different reinforcing and obviously structural elements of these buildings and these different projects. So a lot of work, not just for iron workers, but all the other trades. really. So, depending on what people have an interest in, there are definitely opportunities out there for them, once everything opens up. So the key is getting involved now and getting prepared so that when these things do happen, you've got to step up and you got a leg up on kind of on your competition, right, for some of these great jobs.
Absolutely. Yeah, I want to get into the apprenticeship program here in a minute, but I want to go back to this advisory committee. Is this something, to your knowledge, relatively new, what they're doing in Washington? And, you know, we've got a great labor secretary being Marty Walsh, who comes from the trades. I'm just wondering, is this something that's, I guess, out of the ordinary? What do you know about that, Wayne?
Well, yeah. So actually, the OSHA's, there's always been a number of different advisory committees. And this advisory committee on construction safety and health actually goes back to the 70s. When it was recognized that the construction industry had unique hazards and circumstances that were different than what was faced in manufacturing in the general industry segment. So, things where you're going to a static work location, day in and day out under one roof and nothing really stays, nothing really changes. It all kind of stays the same. Whereas in the construction industry, that job has to keep moving. It has to keep progressing. Constantly. So, there's always change happening. The weather, the elements, the different things that we get into working outdoors, and as all those conditions change and the site changes, new hazards are introduced to the job site constantly. So, recognizing that, OSHA, worked with stakeholders years ago to put together this advisory committee on construction safety and health to really get input from the industry on rules and regulations that would directly impact the construction industry. And so, if the agency has some ideas on what they want to do by these mandates, they actually have to go and run this before AKOSH for AKOSH's input before they put that rule or that standard out. So it's a pretty tremendous opportunity. It's again, one of five labor representatives to serve on this 15-panel advisory committee. And, not only is it an honor, but it's a lot of responsibility that goes along with it to make sure that, we're considering all the factors and all the options that could directly impact the industry when it comes to the safety and health of America's workers.
It sounds like a pretty good mix of people. I'm just wondering, in your opinion, the group that's there, and there's a total, you said 15 people are all together on that committee. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes, sir. Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is that a pretty good group of people that can handle this mission? I'm talking about worker safety. Do you feel comfortable with the people around you?
Absolutely. We have a tremendous group of people. Obviously, from the labor side, we have a number of folks who are seasoned and have been around and have a direct interest, obviously, for the protection of their members in the industry. We also have some different contractor or employer representatives, as well as some public, some members from the public who are serving on that. And they all have tremendous safety credentials that go back for decades. And we all kind of, even though we may come to the table maybe with some differences, it's all in the interest of safety and health. And obviously, from the labor side, we're looking at it from, helping to protect the workers. But in a lot of cases, even the employer representatives that are on the advisory committee, they're trying to protect workers too. How you get there might be a little bit different, but on most things, we're pretty well in alignment on how we want to see people protected and ultimately that they all go home at the end of the day with all their fingers and toes.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up about the employers, because we often hear in the media about the bad employers, and there's bad employers, let's be honest, and they don't care about worker safety, but there are many that do care about their workers. And when you are hired at a firm, that firm is investing in you, and hopefully you'll be a long-term and productive employee. And that being said, Wayne, can you speak to that as far as how many good employers and what it takes to be a good employer? I think that's something that probably comes up in a committee like that, don't you think?
Oh, sure. You know, on that committee, you know, and even in my career, Flash, you know, I've had the opportunity to work on both sides now. You know, I worked as an employer representative, working for a different union construction trade association. So I had an opportunity to work directly with the trades. I got to serve as an advisor on a couple of local joint apprenticeship training committees. And you get to know the contractors in the geographic area where you're serving on those committees. And a lot of them, you know, they participate. They're active. They're active in their local association. They're active within their joint apprenticeship training committee. They care about the people, and they care about the industry. And they've earned some of the respect of those members, where they've put forth a lot of effort to not only build their business, but also in developing the careers of the men and women who are in the industry. And so they see that as an opportunity to give back. So when you get to see a lot of those companies, and I remember doing a lot of safety training, back in the day. And when we would go out there, you know, you could talk to the men and women in the field, and they could tell you exactly who they felt the good employers were versus maybe the ones that weren't so good when it came to safety and health, and who they would prefer to work for and maybe not prefer to work for. And it was a lot of the culture of what was within those different companies, how they viewed their workers, now in our case, our members, and what they seen. We always had a saying, don't let your contractor think more of you than you do yourself when it comes to safety and health. And a lot of times it resonated with a lot of the workers, because, they didn't want to have to do certain things when it came to, I got to come into another OSHA class, or I got to take this training, and it's, all safety and this safety that. But then when they start to understand that it's there as a way to help them progress in their career, that maybe there's a contractual requirement, but ultimately it's to help make sure that they go home whole at the end of the day. They appreciate that. And We see that with our contractors helping to drive it. And then, like I said, a joint apprenticeship training committee, that means that there's both. There's stakeholders on both sides, union with, for example, the ironworkers, and then also the signatory employers that participate. So usually they're in pretty well in lockstep as they come in as to how they're trying to drive the industry and encourage the safety and health practices that are going to go on within that industry.
It's really good to hear, Wayne. You know what? I got to take a quick break. We can talk next about the apprenticeship programs, and I'll tell you, we talked earlier, there's going to be some jobs. Eventually, they're going to get that legislation passed in Washington. Let's be honest. They're fighting now. We compare that to making sausage. It's a pretty ugly process, but it sure tastes good later on, especially when it's on the grill. Wayne Cressup joining us on our live line. Dave Meginhardt will be joining us later in the show on behalf of the United Labor Agency. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our Raising Wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And we are now available on 6 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and about a month ago, we added the platform known as Stitcher. Many ways you can access this show we call America's Workforce. And when you get a chance, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and we always appreciate a good rating, especially a 5-star rating. So please do that for us. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin Wayne Cressup on behalf of the Iron Workers, another proud sponsor of America's Workforce, ironworkers.org. I want to throw another website at you, too. It's impact-net.org. Impact-net.org. I love that word impact because we always try to make an impact in our lives with our family, what we do on the job, and we want to make sure it's a powerful impact. Wayne, I want to talk about the apprenticeship programs, and there's a lot of opportunity out there right now, and it's across the board for all the trades, plumbers, carpenters, electricians, you name it. And there's a lot of building going on. It's a good time, and there's great wages and benefits when it comes to the trades. And I want to give you a few minutes here to sell what the iron workers are doing. So it's all yours, my friend. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you, Flash. Again, great to be on the show again, and appreciate the opportunity. And as you said, apprenticeship, you know, that's where it all starts. And, you know, there are tremendous employment opportunities, you know, as you said, with all the trades to come in and get involved and to get to have your hand in something. So really the cool part about it is that these are oftentimes a lot of skills that you can take with you throughout your career. And we look at this as not just a job, but a career opportunity. This is long term. And the neat part about this is that there's no college loan debt. You know, I reflect on, you know, coming out, starting out after college and everything, and coming to work locally for the, you know, for the contractor association. And we're doing all sorts of OSHA classes. And here I'm sitting here in a class, you know, doing all this training with apprentices, doing safety training. And these apprentices coming in and their first and second years at that time were making more money than I was. And they had, and here I'm paying off student loan debt. They have no student loan debt. And even today, you know, you go through and you take these courses and you build up through your apprenticeship program. And at the end of that 4-year period, you know, there's no student loan debt. And you're getting college credit toward an associate's degree. In a lot of cases with a lot of these apprenticeship programs, they have ties to various community colleges, and you can get credit toward your associate's degree. You take a few more classes, and now you've got an associate's degree, which is a really cool thing. And even then, you know, we've learned that, you know, a lot of cases, some people start, you know, after finding out that college really isn't for them. You know, they may have taken some college courses, and it's not resonating, it's not working, and so. You know, oftentimes, you know, going through a building trades apprenticeship program is a great way to find an excellent career path where you can earn while you learn. You make a great living, and as you said, Flash, you know, there's retirement benefits, you know, healthcare that all go into it, plus a pride and craftsmanship that goes into it. And you know, no matter where you go around North America, and you talk to iron workers. You know, they'll tell you, you know, I built that, you know, well, you build it all by yourself. Well, no, but that's the pride that comes with being in this trade and being in the building trades in general, is that there's a tremendous amount of pride in having involvement in working on these landmark projects. You know, you think about what we have here in Cleveland, like, you know, this past week with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremonies. You know, I have people and know people that worked and built that Rock and Roll Hall of Fame right here, right in Cleveland. And what a cool thing to be able to say that they were involved in that project. You know, and there's projects like that all around the country where union iron workers and union trades professionals, you know, had that opportunity to work in that. So, you know, in the iron workers program, you know, serving in the apprenticeship, you know, it's 160 hours a year for a 4-year apprenticeship. So it's basically 40 hours, you know, a 1-week period where you go in and you're at the school and you're learning various courses. And then you're also, you know, like I said, earn while you learn, because then when you're not in school, you're typically working for a signatory employer on various jobs throughout that region. again, you know, working, earning a living, earning a paycheck, and accruing those benefits. And then every 6 months you get a raise. To the time when you graduate 4 years later, you're making journey person wages and having all those benefits that go into it. So, again, a tremendous opportunity. When you talk about the safety and health aspect of it, you know, you think about in a four-year apprenticeship program, you're getting, you know, an OSHA 10-hour, you know, your first aid CPR, you know, mine safety and health training, scaffold user training, scaffold erector dismantler training, confined space training, forklift, qualified rigger, and a lot of these different training things that are related to safety and health also come with some kind of certification that, you know, allows that person to be able to go and perform that different type of work. And again, those are certifications that somebody can take with them, again, throughout their career. You know, I look back on that OSHA 10-hour. I remember back in the 90s when we were starting to roll out, you know, a lot of the OSHA 10-hour training programs. And we talked earlier in the show about some good companies and some bad companies. Well, at that time, you know, like I said, it was relatively new as the OSHA 10-hour was coming out. And for some companies, the apprentice who came out of school that already had their OSHA 10-hour card, you know, a lot of times they were made the safety person because they were the only person that was on that crew or in that company that at that time that actually had any kind of formal or recognized safety training. Mm-hmm. You know, things have changed, obviously, you know, since then. But, you know, at that time, that's how things were kind of looked at.
Yeah.
You know, now, you know, people come out with, with all these different types of training. It's really impressive of what people have under their belt by going through a recognized apprenticeship training program.
Wayne, if you don't mind, I want to talk a little bit more about the certification and the big projects. You mentioned the Rock Hall of Fame and on your website, ironworkers.org, some of the big projects like the Golden Gate Bridge, the Sears Tower, the St. Louis Arch. It would seem to me that when you're working on, you're an iron worker, and you're working on a project of that magnitude, you have to have the proper certification for that, like OSHA, because I mean, these are big projects. Am I correct in assuming that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when you come to these different programs, so a lot of times there's built right into this, especially those large projects like you just mentioned. You know, a lot of times they will have criteria that's established by the general contractor or construction manager, or maybe even the owner might have certain requirements in there that maybe everyone who comes to the job site has at least as a minimum an OSHA 10-hour card or an OSHA 10-hour certification or training. They may require that supervisors such as foremen or general foremen or superintendents, when they come out, that they actually have to have at a minimum an OSHA 30-hour, you know, if they're going to be running work on that particular project. And then, you know, just in general, the OSHA standards require the additional elements of training just to do certain activities. So, you know, like I mentioned before, like the scaffold user, if you're going to work on a scaffold on a construction project, you know, the standard says under subpart L that, you know, all scaffold users have to have a certain amount of training. So as a result, these apprenticeship programs put together training that's going to help employees, you know, our members, when they show up on these jobs, have those minimum credentials to be able to have access and be able to go straight to work. Mm-hmm. And again, that's a benefit of being signatory with a union, a building trades union here in North America.
It all starts with the apprenticeship programs. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of opportunities for those of you listening right now. And it's across the board with the trades, across the board, all good stuff. Wayne, I always enjoy having you on the show. You are so articulate and so knowledgeable when it comes to safety and training and the health of workers and the importance of good employers. You want to work for a good employer, and I think the good employer wants to make sure they have a good employee as well. There's a connect there, and that's what it's all about. Let's drive everybody to the website again. It's ironworkers.org, and also you might want to check out impact-net.org. All good stuff there. Wayne, I'm going to let you get back to work, and let's do this in a couple more months. I want to get an update on that OSHA Advisory Committee on Safety and Health. That sounds like a good group of people, as you indicated. He's one of 15 on that committee. Five labor reps, and he's one of the five. And good things ahead. It's good to see, especially a labor department that's really aggressive when it comes to worker safety. Wayne, you take care. Stay safe. Enjoy the upcoming holidays, and we'll be in touch. Okay, brother?
Appreciate it, brother. Thank you, Flash, and keep those guys at Local 17 on their toes. Appreciate all you do.
I'm trying. Yeah, we're still recording the show at Local 17 near downtown Cleveland. All right, Wayne Cressup with the Ironworkers. Coming up next, Dave Meginhardt on behalf of the United Labor Agency. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook. That would be AWF Union Podcast, which is also our Twitter handle, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two. Welcome, one of our regulars, also a sponsor. I'm talking about Dave Meginhardt. Dave is the executive director of the United Labor Agency, ulagency.org. Always hear me promoting them on the show. And he's here to talk about an upcoming event. And I have the honor of being the MC for that event, which I have done for many, many years, except for last year because of this pandemic. Dave Meginhardt, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today?
Oh, I'm doing great.
Good.
Good to be back.
So, November 18th at the Cleveland Art Museum, the Unsung Heroes Dinner. Now, we've talked about this before, but we've got a lot of new listeners, added listeners every day. Why don't you explain what the Unsung Heroes Dinner is all about?
Right. So, except for last year, every year we have a fundraising dinner for the United Labor Agency. And what the Unsung Heroes Dinner is, we want to celebrate the folks that would normally not get the accolades, but they really are the backbone and the lifeblood of unions. So it could be a recording secretary that showed up for the past 25 years. It could be an office secretary. It could be an activist on the floor. It's this great, when we do them and we see this broad swath of workers and how their actions and what their dedication to unions and how, to promote unionism, to be, really activists, but in a quiet way, that we don't generally celebrate, even though we could, elected officials, the elected union officers, but this is for the people that are, really the rank and file and really what unions are all about. So when we do these and we have the awards, the stories are great. The anecdotes about how people came to work, why they work, what the union has meant to them and their family. Oftentimes, the awardees will bring their family, and you can tell the pride not only the family has in them to receive this award and to have their dedication recognized. But I think you can also see, you know, with the workers who get the award, you know, that they want the families to know, you know, that this is like important to them. And it's always a really super special night. And this year, you know, we're doing it at the Art Museum, which seems a little fancy for us. But it's our 50th year, you know, in existence. So we're celebrating our anniversary. And we thought we'd do it at the Art Museum. Usually we do it at Lander Haven. So that's a special event, too. It's going to be in the atrium and that beautiful new part of the art museum. So we're really looking forward to it. You know, and even being at the art museum, there's a reason for it, too, that United Labor Agency has always had an interest in how the arts intersect with work. And we've done everything from produce one mad off-Broadway play in our history to creating a pictorial photography book to we have a short story and poetry book under works right now that is dealing with work. We've sponsored workers as artist shows. And for a long time, we had an advocate on our board named Ben Schaus, who was from the Upholsterers Union. And that was really his whole crux, because it's the idea that of bread and roses, right? You know, workers need bread, but they also need roses too. And one of the roses is dignity, and you know, art can uplift us, right? And tell our story and make us, you know, I think make us appreciate life in a different way. So that's why we're having it at the Art Museum too. So that'll be a cool, very cool venue. And thank you again for, you know, being the host. It always makes it easy, and you've been a great, you know, addition, you know, all those years.
It's my pleasure, and it's an honor to do this, because as you pointed out, there's a lot of people that deserve the credits that they don't get on a normal day in the office, and they do the grunt work. That's the thing. How many heroes do we have this year?
Right now, I mean, the deadline's almost approaching, so we always like we have 6 right now.
Okay.
And so that's, you know, that's good. Usually we have between 6 and 10, but there's always one that kind of sneaks in at the last minute. So we're, you know, we're looking for, so it's still open for the next couple of days. If somebody's listening and they're like, oh, I meant to do that, I saw that nomination form and it's been sitting on my desk and I'm going to do it now. But so do it now. Send it in.
So get it in right away. Yeah.
Get it in right away. That's right.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Don't delay.
Should they just go to the website, ulagency.org?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yes, go to the website, and they'll find all the information there. Yeah.
All right, yeah. Let's talk about work after the pandemic. We're still in it, and it's getting better. More and more people have taken the vaccine, and there's still a lot of remote work going on, let's be honest there, but you have a good handle on what's going on employment-wise, and I'll tell you, it's crazy. I mean, you know about August, you had a record amount of people quit their job saying, you know what, I'm done.
Yep.
And many of them, frontline workers, they were deemed essential. They were called heroes, but they're not getting paid as heroes, so they're frustrated. So talk to me about that, and what do you see that lies ahead, and how does the ULA connect these people with the right job?
Right. So, you know, over this time, we haven't seen many people come in, you know, because, again, if they're opting out of their jobs, they're out, you know, a lot of people are just opting out of looking for work. And it has gotten better. Our last, you know, quarter, you know, more people have come in, and it was more like pre-pandemic, you know, traffic, you know, you call it, like, number of people coming in. And the good news is that what we've seen is a lot of people are going into training, vocational training, updating their skills. So they were very wise about it. So while there was support from federal government and for a while for the state, with, you know, extended unemployment, that what they did is they used that time to update their skills. And so for the past year, we've set record after record of people going into training. So that's the good news. So that means that you were sick of your old job, you came into the ULA, We send you to vocational school. You updated your skills. Now you're going to be ready to go into a new career once you're either done with the training or when you're comfortable with the coronavirus fading. So that's really good. So the people that haven't done that right now, that's still available, right? That's still a possibility. So if you've run into a dead end, right? If you've been a restaurant worker and you just can't do it anymore, you want to try to find a place that has some paid time off, or all kind of retail, all that kind of stuff. And you want to change careers. One of the ways to do that is to try to update your skills, and we can help you with that. It's all free. It's paid for by the federal government. We administer these funds. And again, record numbers of people over the past year have taken advantage of it. And that is a huge step. If not, if you're not like, look, I just need a job. I need to get different, I need to get help. And I don't have the time to go to training, or, my situation isn't such that I want to do that. We can also help to ascertain and assess what skills you have and what those transferable skills are to go into new industries, because it can be daunting. We have a lot of experience, and mostly in Northeast Ohio, with companies closing, and what are called dislocated workers, that when somebody's laid off and you've done something for 20, 25 years, and then you're trying to reimagine what you want to do, you can get into kind of cul-de-sacs, right? You can think of you can not maybe understand what the skill levels you need for other industries. You can waste a lot of time looking for things that you necessarily can't find. So we could help you with all that. And because we want to support that quest of people who want to find better situations. That's what we're about. If people are motivated and they want to follow through completely on the Great Resignation, then a job center like Ohio Means Jobs that ULA runs can really be helpful to that, because we have conversations and we ask the right questions, and we get you thinking about what it is you want to do and how it is you will get to that, and what steps you need to take to get to that ultimate goal. So we always talk about urgency, and we always talk about how is it, that you can do it, but you need to do it now, right? Because there's a ton of opportunity out there. It is absolutely a worker's market. But you have to be prepared for it, right? You have to know where you're looking. So that's my advice, and I think that's how people get prepared. Think about what you want to do, and come let us help you, right? Let us help you make that transition and get to that new career.
So, Dave Meganhart, what's the best advice? Should they go? Should they call the United Labor Agency? Should they go to the website? How do they prepare for the next part of their career?
They can do it all. They can go to the UL Agency, ulagency.org. They can call us. The phone number's on the website. And they can even come down to the Ohio Means Job Center. So we have the Ohio Means Job Centers, ULA runs them in Summit County, Cuyahoga County, Lake County, and Medina County. So come to any, if you're listening from any of those locations, come in to the center. And they're listed again on our website where you can come for help. So that's the first step. Just start having a conversation. It doesn't cost anything. It takes a few minutes. You can find out exactly what you can get with us and see if it's for you. That's the best way.
As Dave pointed out, there's lots of good opportunities. Wages are going up. Benefits are going up. Employers want employees. So now is the time. Start at ulagency.org. Dave, great job as usual. Looking forward to the event on November 18th, and we'll talk to you next month, okay?
Okay, great. Have a good day.
All right. Dave Meganhart on behalf of the United Labor Agency. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, the trial lawyers of Kelly and Ferraro and Senator Sherrod Brown will be joining us. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.